Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This week on Meet and Three, I'm about to go on maternity leave. This is Katie Mosman-Wadler, and before I leave you in the incredibly capable hands of Team HRN, we're rounding out Season 5 with a deep dive into the food rules, weird cravings, and overall hype about eating while pregnant.
There are a lot of safe foods to eat, and we shouldn't be sort of assuming that just because something is raw that it's dangerous.
I just found myself feeling like there was an alien piloting my body and brain, and totally changed the way that I ate.
So was it the eggplant? Sure. Why not? I just don't know.
Tune in to this week's episode of Meat and Three anywhere you listen to podcasts. I'll be back soon with our newest and tiniest producer in tow.
Good morning. And the headphones are on. I do want to start televising this. This is the Main Course OG. Happy New Year. It's Thursday, January 9th. I've already lost track of time a little bit.
First show of the decade.
First show of the decade. You're
right. For all of HRN.
The roaring 20s.
That's right. For all of HRN. This is a historic moment. We are, coming onto the airwaves a little bit sooner than everybody else.
We're 9 years away from the 100th anniversary of the greatest depression in American history.
Let the countdown begin.
1929, stock market crash.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the guys don't focus on that too soon. So I am here in the studio this morning with the voices you have already heard. We have Patrick Martins.
Thanks for having me.
Always welcome back. Into the new decade, feeling good. And we have Trig Brown, our new official co-host in 2020.
Yeah, happy to be here. Happy New Year.
Good. Happy New Year. What'd you do for the New Year?
Ooh.
Are you a pop bottles kind of guy?
No, I actually bailed on Patrick. We were supposed to. Bring it in together.
I was just going to come to Winsun.
Yeah.
But I didn't.
So what did you do? Pop bottles at home?
I microdosed with my neighbors.
Microdosed alcohol or?
Can you give us a little bit more information?
I put something on my tongue. No, I was just hanging out. I mean,
you
basically,
put something
I
hung on
out
your tongue?
Just to let you know, when you say microdose, people think you mean like mushrooms or acid.
Okay.
So if you mean alcohol, you should clarify.
But it was nice. Neighbors are great because you don't judge neighbors. You don't
confirm
judge them. They live so close to you that they're exempt from any of the things that would annoy you. If the person lived like a few neighborhoods away.
But so, they're not exempt from what if you share a wall or your kids run and annoy them.
Or some
them.
Acid.
Yeah. Not that close. Yeah, okay. No. The people below us, hate our guts.
Does everyone here have neighbors? Trig, are you in a building that
I actually, there's neighbors. Nobody in my building.
No, are you the first tenant to move in? Is it new construction?
Yeah, there's still construction going on.
So
my adult neighbor is teaching themselves how to play the flute and like from zero.
Oh my god.
It's real rough.
So do they keep late hours for this flute
practicing?
They're
pretty respectful on the timing, but I get a lot
of flute
serenades in the evening.
Best flute scene in movies. Will Ferrell. Anchorman
definitely
blows the fire out of it, drinks a cocktail out of it.
Oh, I thought it was, doesn't he also play the flute in Old School, Dust in the Wind?
Oh, maybe. Well, Anchorman was the big one, but maybe Dust in the Wind. He sang in Dust in the Wind when What's-His-Name died.
Yeah, true.
Wasn't there a instrument scene in, American Pie? Was that a flute? Mm-hmm. A clarinet?
It was a flute.
It was?
Mm-hmm. At band camp.
So this the voice you hear is our special guest today. We have executive chef of St. Anselm here in Brooklyn, Hannah Lyons.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me on. This is very exciting.
Thanks People for being here and restaurant. For reassuring that I was right about the flute in American Pie.
People love your restaurant. It's a lot of people's favorite steakhouse. I think it's more than a steakhouse. I mean, it does different things.
But
it's
a lot of people's literal favorite. Yeah, and it's great to hear. It's really exciting. Yeah.
So you've been at St. Anselm. You were there for a long time, and you are now back.
Yes. I started out as a prep cook and a line cook. Then I was the sous chef for a number of years, and then I left, and now I'm back to be the head chef.
What were you doing when you left?
I worked freelance for a year, and I got into food styling, which is a funny world. I worked on McDonald's commercials. I worked on IHOP commercials. I did magazines, and I started working for the Food Network and doing a Food Network show and was a culinary producer, which was also a funny world of sort of what does the rest of America cook at home? And being exposed to that. So I did that for 2 years and then was always picking up restaurant shifts still at St. Anselm and other places. And so when I heard that the head chef position was going to become vacant, I threw my name in. And yeah.
Joe Carroll, and you got along?
We do. Good. Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we love it, all three of us.
Are there
places.
Any McDonald's items that are going to make their way onto the St. Anselm menu or inspired by anything in your food styling moments?
I did eat a fresh Filet-O-Fish that we would cook it for the ad, and they're delicious when they're fresh out of the fryer, but I don't think I'd ever have one at the restaurant. McDonald's restaurant.
But just to clarify, this is like fresh frozen.
Yeah, yes, okay. Yes, fresh frozen.
But. I'm not ashamed to say I love McDonald's.
You're number one, right? Meal number one.
That's your number one fast food?
Number one fast food. Yeah, it's not number one in general.
No, number one, you always order the number, the number one
yeah,
meal.
Yeah, thank you, the Big Mac. Yeah, that's
the
right.
Big Mac
with
meal.
The six-piece chicken wing as
yes,
well.
Yes, exactly.
I like Wendy's.
I love that. I love Wendy's.
But you prefer McDonald's?
No, not even. Maybe. If it came down
yes,
to
you,
it.
Yes, what do you mean?
I love Wendy's as well. I do. It's so good.
What about Chick-fil-A or Popeye's chicken sandwich?
I'm a Bojangles guy.
Okay.
I like Chick-fil-A. If I have to pick a nugget, they're the least square-shaped of all the nugget choices. I think they make a good one.
Did you see they've disassociated some of their... funding or so I'm not really sure what the details are, but they've like distanced themselves away from their homophobic they've come far in some social
yeah they're becoming a little bit more progressive. Are they going to be open on Sundays now? They're very Catholic. they're closed all locations of Chick-fil-A on Sundays.
Yeah, that's remarkable.
Yeah. All right, we always kick off the show with a game of word association. So we've selected a word or term for each person, and it's sort of like a what comes to mind first, or, you know, give us 10 words or less. Hannah, yours is foie gras.
I just don't get it. That's it.
Okay.
You know?
All right, okay.
Like misunderstood?
No. A lot of people, obviously you didn't research the show. Foie gras is a... No, just kidding.
I get other... This is going to go to more than 10 words. I get other, you know, let's say high-end food, caviar. Mm-hmm. What else is there? Truffles. Mm-hmm. Foie gras just...
Because of the humane aspect.
No, forgetting that.
Yeah, me too.
That's an issue.
Roasted foie, though, is like so good.
See, mine's not about the humane thing. It just doesn't do it for me. It's a little too...
Gooey?
No, it's a little too rich. I don't know. I'm also not a bone marrow person. Do those fall into the same?
I guess I never thought it was a humane issue for the goose because I kind of would like to keep eating myself.
Yeah. you would like to be forced
to. That's so bad.
Foie gras is not something we will find on the menu at St. Anselm.
No. I also don't know if you can grill it. That's sort of our...
Does everything at St. Anselm have to
be challenging? Yeah.
It would just go up in flames.
Yeah. We like to have things touch the grill, we say, so... Not everything has to be grilled. We certainly have like raw salads on the menu, but that's what I'm always thinking about is can it be grilled?
Low key favorite appetizer you guys, when you guys do the salmon collar.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It is so good.
It is very
good.
I've only had it at St. Anselm, D.C. I have not had it here in Brooklyn.
They have it on the menu.
But the salmon collar is on the menu in D.C. and it is fantastic.
What about caviar? You do Ocetra or.
I mean, I'll eat it. I don't know.
Oh, I see. You don't serve it at St. Anselm.
No, we don't. No.
She's like, I'll eat it if you're.
I'll eat it if you give it to me at a party.
But yeah. All right, Trig, your word, term, new year, new you.
Oh, a lot of things like you know, weight loss, fatherhood, bankruptcy. a lot of depressing.
So 2020 is looking happy and depressing at the same time.
No, it's happy. I'm just, you know, also nervous. I want to make sure, you know, I got a kid on the way and, you know, we have a new business. So I'm trying to make sure all my ducks are in a row and taking these challenges face on.
Do you think you'll open a third place in 2021 or something like that?
Maybe 2021. Yeah. We're working on a project right now.
Same corner.
No, got to diversify the corners.
Are the other people on those other two corners looking at you being like, they're coming for us?
Well, one is a deli and we're super tight with those guys. And then, the other one is like I'm not sure the technical term, but it's kind of like a assisted living. I think some might have something to do with substance abuse or maybe just homelessness, but there's like, you know, a lot of folks that have, subsidized housing in this, but I think it's affiliated with the church next door. So it's, I don't think they're worried about us.
Maybe you could sponsor the wafer process, you know, in church when they give you the wafer. Maybe it could be like a dumpling, or maybe you could make a little brisket sandwich.
This is when Jews make suggestions for how to better the church experience.
Communion is my favorite part of the church experience. I love the little wafer and the wine. I like that. That's like what keeps me going.
You'll never miss going up for communion.
No, I mean, if it's available.
What it could be a fried chicken sandwich bite.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. I'd love that.
Oh my gosh. I feel like this whole group actually in the room sort of has that like neighborhood restaurants on both sides of the block. You guys have Fet Sau across the street and I never say it right. Spuytendeivel.
Well, I will say all three of us except Trig, Emily, Hannah, and Patrick grew up within, I think, probably a mile of each other in Manhattan. 81st and Madison.
At very different
57th
times. 57th, yeah.
Oh, we're not the... Oh, right. I think I'm a little older.
Wait, where did I grow up? You don't remember?
88th and West End.
Close. Fourth, yeah.
84th and West End.
No, I like that. So my husband was listening to a podcast this morning, Adam Carolla, and he listens almost every day. And this morning they were doing they all know each other so well, all the co-hosts, and they were asking everybody to create their like Twitter or Instagram bio for each other. They were reading celebrity bios and making people guess from a choice of three, like which celebrity did it belong to? And then they were trying to write them for each other. So Patrick, what would my Instagram bio say?
Your Instagram bio would be, I love cheese and I'd like to share a wheel with you.
Okay. Yeah. There is cheese referenced in my current Instagram bio. Maybe you checked it this morning. Trig, what would Patrick say?
It would have something to do with his witty Instagram.
Thank you. You actually said something very sweet to me. He said, I actually looked at your Instagram in detail. And it is very good. More people should be liking you.
I agree.
I know. I think I may have gotten a follower.
Hannah said she didn't have service when she walked into the studio. It's debatable. It's pending at the moment.
I feel terrified when I request being liked. I don't want to go through rejection. I have three kids. I have a wife. I don't go through rejection other than through chefs who don't buy from us or whatever. But like, I don't want to request it unless I'm with the person and be like, are you going to accept me if I put requested?
It's kind of bold though, just to go for it, you know?
That's true.
Did you accept me, Hannah? I requested to follow you
last night. Yes. Okay.
I also last night requested, speaking of, speaking of waiting to be accepted, Brandon's not with us today, but his word association was going to be Barstool Pizza. There's this guy who owns Barstool Sports, or he's the president. His name's Dave Portnoy, and he does these like outrageous one-bite pizza reviews. So I kind of wanted to know what Brandon thought of him, but you have to request to follow him. But I'm not joking, within half a second, he responds. So he just like glued to his phone? Like, does he want to know? Like,
maybe
what's he monitoring?
Maybe he has an assistant.
But what's he monitoring? Why isn't it just public?
Sometimes that guy is pretty controversial.
I know.
Yeah, so I mean, he probably wants some sort of
there's no way
validation.
No,
but he probably like, it probably serves his ego to know that people are requesting to follow him. You know,
maybe. Whatever, Portnoy. What's next?
All right. Your word, restaurant week.
Oh, restaurant week is a chance for Emily and I to sell cuts from the pig, because we always have to buy 200 pigs a week because all the farmers rely on us to buy all their pigs because they can't sell them to the commodity market for how much it costs. So it's a chance for us to move shanks and ground and country ribs and things that we can't regularly move. So I love it. Restaurant week is we discount our food, but we move it. So we constantly cycle through. What do we move? 200 pigs, 50,000 pounds of heritage breed pigs a week. So that's tough.
Neither of the chefs sitting in the room are participating in restaurant week.
No, but
they don't need it for their business.
It was a restaurant week type situation where Trigg brought on our shank with Trotter, which has now become a signature sandwich at Winsome Bakery. So, you know, we're often in need of moving cuts. So sales often lead to long-term relationships for cuts that we have trouble moving.
Cool.
All right, that was a boring answer.
All right, no, that
I'll try to be funny.
It wasn't 10 words or less, but you know, it works. It's no big deal. So we are going to continue with our weekly based segment. I don't know if you all saw, but the Golden Globes were on this past Sunday.
But what is the
Sunday.
Weekly based?
The weekly based is we talk about things that are happening in the culinary scene, with the royals. Oh, Patrick, you have an announcement.
Well, you called save it. Okay. We got to build up towards something.
Patrick called me this
Prince
morning to
Harry,
tell me some
the
news.
Prince Harry, the Duke, and the Duchess are removing themselves from the royal family. They're going part-time. They're probably going to live in Canada, which I did not know. The Queen is Queen of Canada as well. Mm-hmm. So is the French president, the President of Canada. So it's an interesting Trudeau. Is that his name? Trudeau? Mm-hmm. So, you know, Trudeau's the president.
What do the Canadians have to say about this?
Does it matter?
Anybody care about Canada?
No, Canada's cool, but...
Okay,
I mean,
so...
Weird.
They're going to become part-time royals. Is this due to, like, paparazzi and Meghan Markle having a little bit of, you know, the spotlight stressing her out?
She's very upset, and Harry compared her situation to Princess Diana's situation, saying that it makes her desperate and pushes her towards the edge. I mean, the paparazzi actually... We're responsible for the death of
Diana. No, look,
once
you equate it to Princess Diana's situation, I don't think anybody can respond with anything, you know, negative. It's they're protecting their personal lives. But Patrick called me this morning to tell me breaking news.
Didn't she know what she was getting herself into, though?
What's funny, Anne said that. But you kind of also don't. Maybe
he should have talked to her about it a little more. Mm-hmm. Before that. I mean,
really, really challenging.
She was already an actress in the public eye. And I guess maybe she thought, can you really have more paparazzi than a LA celebrity?
Well, Anne said something nice. Princess Grace of Monaco, who I think died in a car crash in the 50s, was in all these Alfred Hitchcock films. And she was really sad to have to leave Hollywood to fulfill her queenly duties. But she did. She understood the importance of it and did do it because there is a lot of charity work they do and all that. But who knows? Maybe they'll still do good stuff. It was a little sad to see that they are so tortured by the spotlight. You know, you would wish they would be happier in it. But
I don't think I would want to be a celebrity. Like, there's this nice idea of it, but, you know, you don't ever have your personal life.
Can you imagine people just staring at you when you go out in public?
Well, they do that with me, not because I'm a celebrity, unfortunately.
They're waiting outside your building. They're staring always. Were they staring at you as you arrived to the Golden Globes on Sunday?
No, but it was funny. Brad Pitt, when he won his award for that great movie, Quentin Tarantino movie, he's like, anytime I'm standing next to someone, they say I'm dating her. You know, if I'm just literally on a bus or something.
Did you like the movie, by the way?
Loved it.
I did, too. I
loved it.
I was totally... blinds. I was like, wait, I know the story. This didn't happen. You know, I wasn't prepped that it was an alt ending, and I really enjoyed it.
Fantastic.
But some people don't
love
it.
Did you see it?
Really?
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
I did. I saw it in theaters. Some special millimeter.
Did you like?
I loved it. Yeah.
Totally entertaining.
Yeah. And it just makes you sad. Like, what would have happened if Sharon Tate could have, not to give away the ending, but you know,
that's okay. Alternative spoiler
reality.
Alert.
Spoiler alert. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, like, hilarious and creative. I loved it.
So the Golden Globes were this past Sunday. It's my favorite award show because celebrities get to drink, eat, and mingle. If you were asked to prepare the menu for the Globes, what would you serve? That's me asking Emily's question.
Yeah, I noticed.
It
is my favorite award show because they don't just sit in rows and, like, look hungry and uncomfortable and like waiting for all the commercial breaks. They all get up, they mingle, like you can see as they're going back to the
Make a prediction?
Yes.
I guarantee you that they do not eat anything special. I mean, tenderloin.
They made
yes.
a very big deal this year that the entire menu was vegan.
Oh, yeah. I would hate to cater to this event. It would
be
terrible.
Do you think people actually eat the food, though? I'm sure most...
Yeah, it would just be... It's probably a huge weight. You know what I mean? It's like... It's the
I don't know if they're actually... Well, if you watch the Globes and as they're coming back from the commercials, the tables are so tight together. Everybody wants to get up and see each other. I think they drink pretty heavily.
Right.
You can usually tell that by whoever accepts towards the end of the night that, like, everyone's been drinking. All right, fine. A bite. What would be your Golden Globe bite? Unlimited booze and one bite.
Well, that's the one bite. What would you say, Chef?
I would do something like very classic, old school. But like we were saying, if people aren't really going to eat it, I would still go for like a little bite of like lobster thermidor or beef Wellington or something that is just like very classically old school Hollywood to me.
Do you appreciate those old kind of cassoulet or whatever? I'm not even coming.
I like them for the sort of their like kitsch factor and, you know, there's something there. But for an award show like this, I think you should do something super classic like that.
When did you get into food? When you were a little kid, you just decided?
Yeah.
Did you go to culinary school or self-taught?
I went to a mostly vegetarian culinary school that recently folded. It was called the Natural Gourmet Institute.
A big surprise.
Exactly. Where was it?
It was in Chelsea. It was like in the 20s in some weird office building and, you know.
It was around till not that long ago, right? It just closed.
Can I ask you a personal question? As a New Yorker, do your Brearley friends, the way my Browning friends are like, what? He wears shorts from March to October. You know, he looks unemployed. He has tattoos. He's works in a meat warehouse. Do your friends, like, totally admire you as being a chef? Or are they like, huh, so she never became a doctor or a lawyer?
I think it's more the latter. Like,
it's unfortunate.
Or they think it's really, really cool, but they have absolutely no idea what it actually entails.
Yeah, it's hard work.
Yeah.
Are you still close with people you grew up with in New York?
I am. Not so much my school itself, but people I met in the wider, like we were talking about, in the wider, you know, social scene of New York.
Yeah. We're thinking about turning this show into, like, New Yorkers only. Trig, you're going to have to, like, become...
Step down.
Yeah, you're step down.
Farewell episode.
We're going to send you through a crash course. We can send you to, like, you know, New York private school just for a couple weeks.
I think I need
weeks.
To be here to, like, to check you guys.
Yeah, it's
like, yeah. Patrick, like, a couple episodes ago was proclaiming that New Yorkers are the most hospitable, stereotypically hospitable people.
Excuse me. Absolutely.
All the three of us was so think we are.
So nice right now. So that was a very aggressive thing you just said, racist, like, Virginian. No, just kidding.
Okay. But no. We moved away from hospitality to civil
inattention.
It's more appropriate.
Civil
inattention. Southern hospitality in New York... civil and intention, they're different things. It's
like not. If I was sitting here at Roberta's and the table next to me, someone sneezed, I would not say, oh, bless you. But if they fell over, I'd help them up.
Yeah. I just, come on. I mean, it's like...
We're very civil.
All right.
The New York Times.
The New York Times ran an article just yesterday about top chefs who first got their start at chain, mostly restaurants. Jacques Pepin worked for Howard Johnson. Suzanne Goen was a hostess at California Pizza Kitchen. Stephanie Izzard was a server at the Olive Garden. So, Trig and Hannah, it's mostly for you. In your years managing kitchens, what would you say is the best schooling for a young cook or server? Is it, you know...
Wendy's or McDonald's?
No. Yeah, well, exactly. Which chain restaurant would be the best schooling? No, is there, I don't know, did you learn a particular life lesson that you carry with you from a first culinary job?
I think I learned pretty early on to stop talking and just listen to people. And I think when you're young and you're really excited to be in that environment, you tend to overcompensate for your inexperience by being super chatty or just talking a lot about, oh, my last place or that my other place, whatever. And I think early on someone really... literally told me, like, just stop talking and just listen to what people have to say. And you don't have to always take their advice, but just keep your ears open and be a sponge.
So if you ignore me, I'll just be like, she's learning.
Yes.
Yeah, like, people are like, yeah, we used to do it like this at this restaurant. You're like, shut up.
Yeah.
Like, stop saying that. It's like almost the beginning to every sentence sometimes new people
exactly.
are like,
shut up.
Yeah. It's like, because, you know, we're not at that restaurant, you know, like, we're doing it this way at this restaurant.
Yeah, I can see you might go to a young cook and say, do you know how to do this already? And they'd say, oh, in my last job, yes. But you don't
then
want them to offer that every time.
It becomes like an opening sentence to, like, every their opinion on every subject. You know, it's
they don't know enough to be intelligent about things yet. I like to say there's a lot of rights ways of doing things right, but there's also things that are just wrong, you know? And if someone's too young, perhaps they're talking about wrong things, like they don't have enough education yet. That's a good point.
I worked at this this like diner in kind of the outskirts of Richmond, Virginia. It was my first, it's not a diner, it's like a, it's a, I don't even know how, what you'd, what you, it was like before, you know, Instagram and all, you know, cooking was like cool. But it was this guy bought the restaurant and he was like big into drugs and he people stopped getting paychecks and like, you know,
what did you learn there?
16 years old. And we, you know, we went from being like a really good restaurant to a really good restaurant that was, you know, started to like not be able to pay our purveyors and, you know, things started to fall apart a little bit. And I, like getting to see that firsthand was actually like really beneficial. I think I learned a lot, seeing all that stuff.
Do you remember when we went on our chef trip with 15 chefs in two vans and we stopped at the Waffle House and then I was in the car and I said, Max, from Sambar at the time, what do you think of the food? He's like, I don't know, but that chef just cooked 40 breakfasts in like 8 minutes.
Yeah, talk about a short order cook. Yeah. I think there are certain skills that you learn along the way. But yeah, no, I read that like Stephanie Izzard said, the Olive Garden taught her hot food hot, cold food cold. Like that was like the, just remember it as a server, like this is what I have to make sure it happens for sure. So I don't know. Anyway, Hannah, I told you I did a little brief googling, mm-hmm. a little research last night. I came across an article about your brother Ben Lyons, yes. who's an entertainment reporter and journalist. The article said he eats Chinese food every single Sunday night, at least as of 2014.
That was something we did growing up. We would get Chinese delivery every single Sunday night, probably just because my mom was sick of cooking for us. But it became this like sort of weekly ritual, and that is pretty much still true. My brother has a group of friends he gets together with, and they go to a Chinese restaurant.
Oh, they go to a Chinese. Is it true that they? They had this for during the 80s, like where the bicycle delivery guy would power a grill in the basket. That's how it came so fast. The Chinese food would
cook the food on the way to your apartment.
Yeah, it would power it. That's how it came so fast. Because literally, you would hang up the phone and your doorbell would ring.
But I think that's because growing up in New York, very often your Chinese food place was on the corner. And I think there are certain things that maybe were pre-prepared.
Go-to Chinese dishes.
Or just the wok is
go-to Chinese dishes. Uh-huh. I think mushu doesn't get a lot of love, but like a pork mushu is great.
Me too.
Yeah.
I love the duck sauce with it.
Mm-hmm. And the little the wrappers that they give you.
Which are never enough. I always want an extra wrapper. Yeah.
Yeah.
I eat a lot.
I guess, too, anything that mixes tofu and meat I find really fun because in other cuisines, tofu is vegetarian. You keep it separate, but...
Would you order off the regular menu or would you order the more expensive, like triple
regular
delight?
Menu?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Dumplings?
Yeah. It's it's kind of.
They're doughy.
It kind of fills you up sometimes and you got to save
a
room
wonton soup, an egg drop soup, or a hot and sour?
Hot and spicy, yeah, hot and sour, yeah.
Scallion pancakes?
Yes, always.
Egg roll or spring roll?
Egg roll.
Okay. Interesting.
Do you still have Chinese food every Sunday night?
No. I can't remember the last time I ordered Chinese takeout, but. I think it's overdue. Yeah.
Mine was long overdue, and I had Chinese food last week while on vacation in Florida. It was excellent. Well, I was really a little negative about going into it, but it was like somebody's local little family-owned joint.
There's a great Chinese restaurant doing takeout.
And it was, you know, probably the best bang for your buck, too. But it was like the whole combination meal. You got the soup, you got the egg roll, you got fried rice that was just as big as...
Fried rice, that's big.
Fried rice or lo mein?
Fried rice. I don't love their noodles, but you do.
Love lo mein.
Yeah.
And fried rice. It's always a hard decision.
I grew up eating roast pork lo mein. That was
a
staple.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you don't have Chinese food every single Sunday night, is there a cuisine or a dish that each of you must have at least once a week?
Go-to dishes?
Or cuisine or something that's always woven into your week. A week would not be complete without it.
Well, pizza. I love breaded cutlets. I could eat that every day. Pork or chicken. What else?
I kind of hate that this is my answer, but I feel like I need a giant salad at some point in the week just to offset everything else we've been talking about.
This is your faulty education at the vegetarian restaurant. What about a nice lamb saddle?
Just a big bowl of raw vegetables to offset everything else that happened the past couple days.
Trig, is there anything for you?
Well, I mean, there's this art, like, there's this bakery near Winsun, and it's been around for, like, 60 years, You get a sandwich for like $3.50.
Was it Princessa? What's it called?
No, it's like other direction. Oh. It's Stella di Sicilia, it is just excellent. Like they bake the bread there every day.
The Star of Sicily, and it's a Spanish joint.
Yeah, they're Argentine. Yeah, it's the family's like originally like Argentine, I think.
That's so funny.
Yeah, but it's you know. The hot sandwiches are, you wouldn't even know they had them if you know, because there's a lot of like the, you know, the sugar cookies and like, you know, danishes and almost like some Cuban pastries in there too. There's like the guava cheese roll and like, you know, certain.
Actually, things. I should say, I'm sorry. There is a salad that I like, chicken salad.
How much? Light mayo?
Do you put mayo on top of the chicken salad? I do that. Is that disgusting? If I have a chicken salad sandwich, I put extra mayo.
No, it has
I do
so not. Much mayo in it already. I drown it in hot sauce, though. Yeah. I do like hot sauce with chicken salad.
I like chicken salad, bacon, cheese,
me too.
Red onion. Oh, of it.
Yes. Sounds like you fully masked whatever is going on in the middle of that sandwich. But yeah,
it disagree. Is funny to take people from the Midwest. Like I took Anne's family to Winsun, and their Asian food experiences, like in Libertyville, are just not as flavorful and tasteful. So I mean, their hair almost fell off their head. They were so enjoying the full flavors of your Taiwanese food. They'd never really experienced like a dumpling that was just oozing
right
taste.
Oh, I do need to ask one important thing about Chinese food. Do they use tenderizer on all of the meat?
I mean, a lot of the meat is just velveted, which is, you know,
what does that mean?
So it's not like tenderizer. They use like a cornstarch. They marinate it with cornstarch and a few other things.
Chicken was a little too soft last week. I was, well, that makes sense though. Cornstarch,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
So I have a question for both of you. Walk-ins versus reservations. What is the sort of, I don't know, school of thought? I know Winsun now takes reservations, I think, for dinner. Winsun Bakery doesn't. St. Anselm has always been walk-in only. What's your take on it?
You're only walk-in?
Yes.
Wow.
We're very lucky that we can be only walk-in. So I think it really, I mean, just depends on the restaurant and sort of how the menu is and how the setup is and what kind of neighborhood you're in. Like, we're very lucky we're surrounded by all these great bars or coffee shops where you can go and sit and wait for, you know, 1, 2, 3 hours sometimes on the weekends. But it definitely changes your clientele because, you know, I wouldn't bring my grandmother to some place that where we had to wait for 2 hours on a Saturday night.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, we do take reservations, but only for 2 tables in the restaurant because they're large tables. You guys have 1 big table, right?
We have 2 big tables.
So we reserve out those 2 big tables throughout the night. You know, so, if, you know, we're a little bit further out. You know, if folks from Manhattan or, you know, larger groups, like, it's helpful for planning purposes for those folks. But, you know, most of the restaurant, like over 75%, is walk-in only. So, and that, like, you know, people, I don't know how your hosts and hostesses take it, but our hosts and hostesses get abused.
Yes, absolutely.
People say fucked up shit to us.
Why? Because they say, you weren't being honest with me. It's 3 hours, not 2.
When people are hungry, they become monsters. So they, I mean, and like, I'm grateful for all of our customers and guests and, you know, I wouldn't, you know, speak ill of them, but so there's like always one bad apple and they like, you know, accuse them of lying. They call them like, they call them horrible names. They, you know, literally they do lie to them. They manipulate. It's crazy.
So can I ask a question? Like if Emily and I came in, do each of you keep a table empty-ish so that if Joe came in and said, hey, I'm just dropped in with my wife and it's our date night, you're like, oh, okay, it's only going to be 15 minutes for you. Like, I know Balthazar used to do that because it was such a huge restaurant. Do smaller restaurants keep a secret?
We just don't have the space. Or customers come in and they see that empty table and they will pester the host and ask, like, can I sit there? Why is that table empty?
I see.
So that's we'll upsetting. Know ahead of time when people like our owner coming in or friends of the owner, but for the most part, it's really a democratic. If Jay-Z were to come in,
he would have to wait an hour.
Probably more, like 2 or 3 hours. But I think that's why, to that same point, we don't get a lot of celebrity diners at St. Anselm, and I wish we had more because that's fun. But We just don't, you know, I don't think
there isn't quite special treatment in that way. But it means everyone's equal.
It's a democratic process.
If you show up at what time do people start to line up to get the
5:35?
Does it like blow your mind a little bit though how people don't seem to just understand the fairness of a list? It's like,
right, or they'll see an empty seat and they'll say, well, that table's empty, and it's like, well, yes, but there's someone on their way.
They've already been waiting for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Like, you just want it,
you know, or they'll try and slip the host money, and it's like, okay, but there's still a list of 50 people ahead of you.
Yeah,
who got here
first.
They're
like, we'll accept the money, thank you, you still have to wait 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, great problem to have. like
it's a great problem,
couldn't
be
luckier, but still, it's mind-blowing how low people can stoop sometimes.
But then for me, at least when I'm on the other side of it and I'm a diner and I'm quoted 2 hours, I try and be on my best behavior and be understanding.
I am still always a little shocked when the number comes out of the host's mouth. I recently lined up for Lucali and I knew I was like a little later than I should have been. And I was like, all right, well, worst case, I'll order the pizza and come back and pick it up. And I'm always a little bit like, there were that many people ahead of me? That really happened? Like, they're really quoting me 11 o'clock at night? Like, I just, I don't know.
So you got to plan for that, right?
Yeah.
You plan. Like, you know, if I'm going to San Salm and I know it's going to be a 3 hour wait, this is a Saturday night.
Don't go hungry.
And I'm going to post up with a friend and get beers or, you know.
Yeah, well, that's the other side of it, is that we have a lot of customers who wait so long and drink so much that by the time they show up, they're
trashed,
very hammered, very drunk. Yes, which creates some interesting drama out on the floor sometimes. That's entertaining,
definitely.
So if I were to ask each of you, you're the single best restaurant in Brooklyn. No ifs, ands, or buts. You just name the restaurant. Would you say San Anselm, and would you say Winsun?
I could genuinely say one of my top picks.
He
wants to know if you would pick your own restaurant.
Oh, no, yes, I would pick St. Anne.
We can pick each other's restaurants.
Nice.
No, I mean, it's easy decision. You know, we take our managers every year to St. Anselm.
But you don't think you have the best restaurant in Brooklyn?
I mean, I would love to think that.
Secretly, would you say, I think mine's the best? I think St. Anselm's the best place to eat in Brooklyn.
It's different. One place. I mean, you can't. Restaurants are so categorically different. You know, it's not like Jean George or EMP or whatever, where you're like, we are the height of dining. You know, like, it's a very, you know, we're cooking like regionally specific Taiwanese food in a very democratic way where people can share and the price point is accessible. So you can, you know, eat around the menu very easily. But like, you know, I don't know. Is that the best? It just depends on what you want. I don't know.
I think it's also subjective.
Yeah.
If you don't think that waiting 2 hours to eat dinner is a fun experience, then you're not going to enjoy coming to a place.
Right.
Like that.
There will always be like a but. It's like, I love St. Anselm, but is it really worth the wait? Maybe I go once a year. Like, it depends.
Well, listen, this New Year always brings about best of lists and predictions for the coming year. For example, the Wall Street Journal reported that lasagna is going to blow up in 2020. That must have been a great article. Sorry, I missed that one. Also read that jerky, or more specifically, biltong, the dried beef from South Africa with no sugar, is going to be big. And flavored gnocchi with kale and chocolate are going to be big. So could you give us some predictions? I'll start this off. I think 2020 is going to be a huge year for the internet.
I think you said that in 2019.
Also, I think entertainment is going to be really big. And possibly, I'm going out on a limb here, I think sports is going to be really big in 2020. All right? Tell me at the end of the year if I'm right.
Hannah, it can be culinary related. It can be anything.
You can be more detailed
any predictions?
Than what I said.
A little less vague than Patrick.
You know, I'm cautiously optimistic about these alternative milks. It kind of, you know, makes me feel like an old lady when I walk in and there's more non-dairy creamers than dairy creamers. But I sort of love to see what weird alternative, you know.
Do you like oat milk?
What's to like, you know? I just think it's like a fun, weird food trend that will never die.
Yeah.
You know, Borden, the third or fourth biggest milk company in the country, went out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And the second biggest, which I don't remember their name.
Hood?
Duke's Hood, maybe, went out of business. So two of the big milk companies are out of
business.
They were
that, like, red speckled one, right? Hood?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so, yeah.
I don't know if that was because of these alternative milks.
Milks with a Y.
My wife, Ann, who's a cheesemonger, says, nuts don't lactate. so you shouldn't call it milk. So I came up with a compromise that you still spell it M-I-L-K, but you pronounce it with a soft K, so milsh. Oat milsh.
I did notice milsh. People are fully converting to the M-Y-L-K, mm-hmm. especially on restaurants.
That makes sense. Good.
Yeah. I don't know if it's like across the board or if that's part of the brand name or it's just what you're supposed to do to
differentiate it. I think it's the dairy farmers getting, you know, up in arms over the use of the word milk.
All right, Trigg, you have any predictions?
Ooh, I'm going to just double down on that lasagna situation.
Okay. Are you going to put on a... Is there
got
a
my fingers crossed.
Is there a Taiwanese lasagna?
No. No. But, you know... Hard no. You know, Maylin at Nightshade in L.A. does a really cool, East Asian inspired lasagna. I should like pull up the dish, but it looks amazing.
We went to 232 Bleecker yesterday, Suzanne Cups's restaurant, and they had a lasagna and a porchetta. It was Anne helped provide the cheese for the lasagna and the porchetta, and the lasagna was more expensive. The lasagna was $29, the porchetta was $26.
We used to do this lasagna craft. I think it's like a Tom Colicchio classic dish, but you just like, you know, it's like a la minute. You know, you blanch the pasta sheet. You put on a quarter sheet tray with beurre fondue. You fold in a soft egg. You know, a lot of Parmesan cheese, black pepper, and butter on each layer with an egg in the middle. Fold it up a bunch of times, and then just douse it. Just shave a bunch of white truffles on top. And you before you do that, you gratin it under the salamander. It's like the best lasagna I've ever had in my life. So you know, fresh pasta lasagna. It's amazing.
It sounds easier for like single portion.
Yeah, it's a
making
small.
Making at home.
Yeah, I mean,
ish.
Honestly, probably easier making that at home than making like a big tray of lasagna.
A big tray of lasagna is very time consuming. There's
why
many
can't you make
components.
A little cassoulet, like little individual lasagna cassoulets?
You can.
You can do that too.
Yeah, sure.
You know what they said that they would like to invent for their porchetta at 232 is a pan or pot, I guess. That is like this. It's like a tire.
It's like a turbo TA, but for
porchetta in it to crisp up the skin, so it's like hot all around for the skin. 360. Does that exist?
It sounds like a cajacina, but for indoors with a porchetta-sized portion. I don't know. I don't know. Does that exist? What do you just use a salamander and you rotate it like a broiler?
Whenever we do porchetta. Justin Wiley's technique is so smart. If you don't have like a brick oven or something, you just take like a rondeau and you put a little rack at the bottom of the rondeau and the oil is like piping out and you just ladle the oil slowly until this fat like renders and crisps. It's like pretty.
But that's very labor intensive. That's not like a set it and forget it.
But then you just go low and slow in the oven. I mean, that's the other way to do it. But either way, it's a very time consuming process to do it right, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
Is your main source of cooking at St. Anselm the wood fire grill? Or excuse me, the is it even
it's
wood
a
fire?
No, it's a gas grill, yeah. I think they either had a wood fire grill when they first opened or wanted to, and just the building, you can't do it in that kind of a building. But yeah, we just have this giant, I think it's like a 6-foot by 3-foot gas grill that we just, everything comes off of it. It's fun to play around. It's fun to have that limitation of, okay, if we're a grill-focused restaurant, what does that mean for specials and new menu items, and can you grill it?
Well, you do larger format things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you
yeah, we
lamb
do.
Saddle.
Yeah, the ribeyes we do. We sell by the ounce, so those will be, you know, up to like 75, 80 ounces.
What are the two lamb? You have a lamb saddle and a
lamb saddle and a lamb chop.
Yeah, the server, they always try to sell me on the lamb saddle. They're like, the lamb saddle, it's a little... more tender and it's kind of like less gamey, and I'm like, but when I want get lamb, I want the gamey, like
you want the lamb
yeah
chop?
I always get the lamb chop.
That's if you're a lamb person or not.
I love that.
Yeah
so
you're
good.
A lamb guy.
Yeah, and you're the strip with the au poivre. The au poivre sauce is just ridiculous.
Yeah. The pork chop.
The pork porterhouse.
That's my
it's been
con.
On since they reopened, relaunched.
We're talking red meat here. Okay?
Yeah. All right.
This is the best pork chop in town. Come on.
So you guys have an open kitchen concept, sort of like 232 Bleecker where you were last night, but you guys, I've sat at the chef's counter. Mm-hmm. Is there, like, what do you love about that setup and what do you hate about it as a chef?
What's interesting is most of the kitchens I've ever worked in have been open kitchens, so it's something that I'm definitely used to, but I know a lot of people aren't. I think a lot of people get into cooking because they don't want to interact with people on that face-to-face level mm-hmm. the way front of house does. But, you know, obviously, first and foremost, it's really nice to hear positive feedback, whether it's a customer actually telling you, I love my meal, I love my steak, this is delicious, or just hearing customers talk about the food when they don't know that we can hear them. You know, sometimes you do feel like an animal in a zoo, you know, people just staring at you and taking your picture and taking videos of you. And but that's part of it. And it's more fun to be, for me at least, it's more fun to be out on the floor than to be like cooking in some basement where you have no idea what's going on and no idea if people are loving the food. And it feels like you're more a part of the restaurant when you get to be in an open kitchen.
Is that like something that you have to factor in though, like when you're hiring a new
Absolutely.
Cook?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you have to work super clean because we do have people who just sit there and watch you work for, you know, their
entire... Well, I always think if I'm going to go to dinner by myself, like, I would at least want to be at a chef's counter. Like, there's something that's, like, happening. It's almost yeah. like you're dining with somebody. There's you know, action. There's things you can pay attention mm-hmm. to. You don't...
It's... But if it's too intimate, like, at a sushi restaurant, it could be awkward. Like, you don't want to talk, and you have to thank the guy every time he brings you a new piece of sushi. But I like the chef's counters where it's in a lively place, not where it's in a silent place. Chef Cesare Casello always says that he sometimes doesn't want to go to Japanese restaurants because it's very severe and it's not fun, you know. But what was the thing you were saying, Trig, a couple shows ago, that you want to see the food being prepared and you don't trust it when you can't see it being prepared?
I didn't say it.
No, at a fast casual restaurant. Who was that?
I don't know who said All right.
that. I mean, I think I always just enjoy seeing the food prepared, yeah. but, you know.
But let me ask you, Trig, do you get, like, if you're going out to eat on your night off, do you want to sit in front of the kitchen and watch the chefs work, or does that feel like you're working?
No, I definitely enjoy seeing, you know, methodical preparation of food. It like kind of soothes me a little mm-hmm. bit, you know, like especially at, like, you know, I don't, you know, eat at a lot of these like super high end, you know, churches of like, you know, fine dining, and not because I don't respect them. I just, you know, if I'm going to spend a lot of money on food, it's usually like a super nice sushi spot. Mm-hmm. So Patty and I, my wife, like once a year, will like a birthday present to one another would be a nice sushi.
Where? Like what?
We went to Yasuda. We went to Tatsu, Omakase Tatsu. I think next on the list is Sushi Naz.
Has she been eating raw fish?
No, I mean, during the past.
No, right?
Yeah, no. But I think like that whole thing, it basically within 2 weeks of her expected due date, you know, she can hit the raw fish.
Because so, that kid's big enough now?
Yeah, it's like, well, it's like, yeah, it like takes a certain number of days for whatever you're worried about while you're pregnant to be.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She did some research. Basically,
she's obviously hungry. She's like, I can do it 2 weeks before.
Yeah. So we're going to, before the kids comes out.
I hope it doesn't end up happening like me. You know, I was in the womb for 11 and a half months, in which case she would get sick.
I have a few friends that had sushi delivered to the hospital post. Delivery. Really? Oh my like that God. Was their first thing.
That's hilarious. But I love watching this chef, you know. I love that, you know, methodical, like, you know, mm-hmm. like perfectly clean, like attention to the detail. Mm-hmm. I like watching people stay clean when they cook. Yeah. That's like cool to me, mm-hmm. you know.
We saw at 2:32 no one drank water the whole time. I think they went to the bank back to drink water. I mean, they're probably not encouraged to just be pounding a big plastic container of water in front of the public. Yeah. I mean, you probably can't, or can you do that? I mean, do you guys drink there?
Yes, we drink water. We have our quart containers.
You have to stay
metal
hydrated.
Straws.
Yeah, especially with you're in front of such a hot grill.
Yeah, yeah.
I drink a ton of water when I
like
cook cooker expo.
Yeah,
especially if you're expo and you're like yelling.
You're
the whole
talking
time.
The whole time.
The whole time. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah.
Wow.
But so a lot of the, I don't know if St. Anselm falls into this law, but I know a lot of the new restaurant construction with the open kitchen concepts, you have to have sneeze guards, like when the customers
really?
Are sitting in front of you.
Boo.
Ooh. I've been hearing that.
I support sneeze guards at communal buffets, like on a cruise ship.
Yes.
I don't want people sneezing on my raw fish.
All right, well, I'm glad you're clearly grandfathered into something that
no sneeze guards. We
won't even bring it up. But so you brought us some beer from your husband. Tell us,
yes.
Does he have a culinary background? Or just...
He's a front of house guy. So he was a server and a bartender, and through bartending got into beer and has worked for a number of beer companies and now is working for Omnipollo. So,
in what capacity as a salesperson?
He's their
brand ambassador.
What's his title? I forget his exact title. He's their let's say he's in charge of their sales in America.
Okay.
So the rest of the company is based in Sweden. They brew all over the world, and he is their American guy.
The American ambassador.
Yes, exactly.
Now, it's funny. I wonder. I mean, I'd like to taste one of these, even though it's warm, but I guess that's not the way to do it. I mean, is the beer taste unlike
I mean, traditionally,
beers in America?
Beer is not cold, you know?
I mean... No, you're right. I think it tastes like a lot of craft. I think it has a lot in common with craft beer. I think too, though, from what I understand about Swedish cuisine, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot like Swedish pastries are a thing and berries. And I think there's a lot of those flavors that come through in what they're doing.
Also, you said it's brewed all over the world. So it means that it's not necessarily consistent in that it only comes from one source. So is there variation? Have you ever noticed? Do you drink a lot of beer or not really?
I taste a lot of beer.
Okay.
I try not to drink a lot of beer. So I taste all of it.
White wine, I've seen people put an ice cube in, and that's made of very little to no water. Now, beer, which I think has a lot of water in it, I've never seen anyone put an ice cube in it. Why is that? You can't water down a beer that's already like 70% water.
I used to be a little embarrassed to put an ice cube in white wine until I noticed that Cesare started to do it, and I felt like because a cultured chef who I respected his like palate and even his like wine choices because he did it that like it made okay. It okay for me mm-hmm. So like recently I don't want to drink white wine that's not
always make fun of Patty when she drinks white wine on the rocks
on the rocks
it's, well to me it's a little bit of fault of the restaurant they didn't serve it to me cold enough in my opinion and so really me asking for ice is a little bit like they should be like oh maybe we adjust our
you're
cooler.
Kind of asking for credit
if you gotta get the like, wine cold so fast drink the wine
I don't know it's maybe like, well, beer, it's like asking
I've
for
never
salt.
Seen anyone put an ice cube in warm beer like oh it's warm put some ice in it and drink it fast never once, no. And I'm 47
we'll put it in the,
years
we'll put it in the
same
freezer
age.
For a couple hours.
We're the same age. We've never seen it.
You're aging Hannah. I do not think she's,
47.
You might have grown up
How old are you? Trick, how old are you? 32?
31.
31, you?
Yeah. I'm 32.
Wow.
32.
Wow.
Ooh.
Matt, what are you, 16?
33, thank you very much.
Oh, shit.
Patrick, you're...
Old.
You're...
I
about
jumped
to be
a
48
generation.
Going on 30.
Building this radio studio connected me to one more generation. I was young at Slow Food and I'm old here. So it's great. I love it.
You're
hanging around with young people cooler than me.
Your beard shows your age.
Yes, the white.
So if you could do something different from what you do now. Now, obviously, you made a choice to just come back to the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. If the culinary world had not fallen into your lap, what would you do?
That's such an interesting question. I think I might try and work with dogs. I just love dogs.
I have a Scottish
a
Terrier
trainer.
At the office.
Yeah?
Yeah.
He's very cute.
Be a dog trainer.
Really? A trainer?
Yeah.
Like the guy with the TV show? What's
Cesar Millan?
Yeah, Cesar Millan.
Wasn't there some controversy with him, though, I think? And
what, him and a dog?
So do you and your husband have a dog?
No, we don't have a dog.
That seems very ironic.
I know. Well, you know.
Your schedule doesn't permit.
Yeah.
I was not expecting you to say training dogs. I thought you would have said advertising or something like that. Training dogs. That's cool. Trig loves his dogs.
Yeah.
You love all dogs. Yeah, you're very...
I'm a big dog person. I grew up with like always like four
here.
Dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
What do you think about pit bulls?
Love them.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Did you grow up with a family dog?
When I was like a kid for my birthday one year, I got a puppy. And then actually my parents' dog is, she's still with us. We adopted her the day I took the SATs. And now she's, I don't know, 16, 17, something like that.
I had two, like about 16 year old, like one was like 14, one was like 16 plus. And they both died this past year.
Oh.
It was like so sad. Yeah.
Well, you know, I had West and Red died within a year and a half of each other.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, you know, one of them, one of them died in their sleep just right on the foot of my parents' bed. It was like really nice that he got to die like that.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, it's just, the hardest thing to deal with.
Well, taxidermy. The fact that we taxidermied our dog helps them live on in some way.
Yeah, you can sit next to scratch his ear still by the fire.
I think that. Are you allowed to do a taxidermy dog?
Of course.
Definitely.
You can do whatever you want.
I'm thinking about it.
You can't taxidermy
I
a human.
No, but if you can taxidermy a deer or a jackrabbit, you could definitely.
It was just occurring to me. I don't know that I have witnessed a taxidermied dog.
Definitely frowned upon.
Really?
I mean,
but it's weird. Is it frowned upon?
I would frown at you.
Yeah,
if you did that. Yeah.
Well,
I would frown upon you.
So what do we have to look forward to as the executive chef at San Anselm?
A rename of the restaurant?
No. New taxidermy decorations?
Just carrying the torch.
Cut that we should know about?
Is there a new pork cut that I should know about?
I don't know. I think there are no new cuts.
Honestly, best pork cut that I had from Heritage last year that I didn't expect is you guys had those skirts, the pork skirts. Yes. Holy
we
shit.
We tried to make a new cut, but
I didn't clean them at all because I had this grill situation at home where I grilled them like very hot and like, you know, just all that, like the silver skin side down because I was being lazy. I didn't want to cook them. I didn't want to clean them up. And I just like charred them really hard on the silver skin side and they were delicious. Like melted in my mouth still. Yeah.
It might be more of a chef's cut than a consumers.
Yeah, definitely.
They might be like, hey, you didn't remove the silver skin.
Yeah, I would never serve it to a customer like that. But I mean, it was so good. Yeah,
skirt is just its own thing. Yeah. When they said the skirt exists on the pig, and it came, and it tasted like the skirt does on the beef. It was really interesting. Yeah, the Mexican guys who run the plant at Paradise apparently take that off of our pigs all the time and, you know, pay a little something. And
Yeah, we did it because Zine at Park Avenue said he wanted to try it, and then we all sort of tried it, sent it around. You had a little bit, Trig.
And, oh, my God, it's so good.
And it was delicious. It's just
a grill cut, though.
Much smaller than a beef skirt. Mm-hmm. It's this skinny little...
Sinewy, very sinewy.
Yeah. Very sinewy. That's why you need the grill, right? It's like...
Oh, you mean you grill it a long time, then the sinew falls apart?
Or just grill it really hot and, like, get it to, like, you know, kind of... render out with the fat a little bit and you know, it makes it a little more palatable.
You should do a kind of like visual display on how to do that here for the radio station for our listeners. Cut it like this, not like this.
No, we're very happy with to be the pork chop at St. Anselm. It is an honor because it's something that people have always spoken highly of and use our bacon.
Yeah.
I don't know. What about like a grilled pork cheek? Would that be weird?
Do you have a bandsaw?
No. We could get one.
Well, if you got one, then we could send you the short loin, and you could be like, pork chop for how many? And you're like, rink, rink. And then...
A la minute.
Bandsaw to order.
Terrifying. When we had the butcher shop at the Essex Market,
bandsaws are scary.
Any time you turn it on, you're like, oh.
Oh, we had one at Kraft. It's awesome. We cut bread on it.
Oh, really?
Vegetables.
God, that's got to be a major liability.
I was so nervous. I had once, I was cutting a salami on the meat slicer, and my hand slid down, and I thought I would react well to pain. I'm a tough guy. I literally chopped off a little thing, and the blood was like, and I was like, I turned gray. And Silva, our Brazilian butcher, ran and got me coffee grounds.
Yeah, I was about to say the same thing. Yeah.
And then he would hold it, and then again, and then I had this crust on my finger for a month.
A nice coffee crust.
You know what's really good?
Super glue. I was really hyped up.
Super glue?
Super glue, like better than wet bandages.
On what?
Just
directly
like,
on the cut?
Yeah. It is so
good.
It'll
seal good.
You up. I mean, it's probably not good for it to enter your bloodstream, but...
So,
oh, my God. But it works so well.
And so you heard it here. Coffee grounds and super glue. Any other secret kitchen...
Have you ever
MacGyver
seen a big
style?
Injury?
Oh, I can't talk about this.
I cut off the end of my finger my second shift. I mean, it's just my thumb.
Oh, it healed?
It healed. But that was my second shift in a real restaurant.
They're like, she's going to do great.
Check this out. This is just from, I jumped just a life. Shelf in my kitchen.
Yeah.
It like sliced the tendons in my finger.
I saw someone, a good friend of mine, we were trying to fix the heat lamp in the restaurant and she didn't know that someone had plugged it back in.
Oh my God.
So she stuck a screwdriver in there.
Holy shit.
Had like a full body current, you know. I guess she wasn't technically shocked because if you get an electrical shock, you die, but she had it, you know. That go through her system.
Wow. I actually thought of a good thing you were saying about, you know, I was
always saying, unplug things. Just disclaimer, always unplug things.
If it's not real milk, it should be a soft K oat milk. If it's a vegetarian restaurant, it should be cooking in a kitchen. A soft TCH. Kitchen.
Yeah.
On that note, happy new year, happy new decade. We're excited to be back on for 2020. We have lots of good episodes for everyone to look forward to.
We want to do this forever. I mean, my secret goal is that We just are hosts for many years. And then when we die, you know, they'll write in our obit, you know, every Thursday they met for 40 years. But, you know, sadly, things change. But when they continue for a new year, it's exciting because change is sad in a way. It's also needed and useful. It's the way of the world. But it's nice that we do things and that there's consistency and excellence.
Hannah Lyons, you're invited back anytime.
Thank you guys so much.
We would love to have you again. And,
you can come back as a panelist, not necessarily as the guest. Okay. So you can just comment on Meghan Markle.
We'll make sure you have a good word association. Like we can talk about the royals. Yeah, maybe you can become an official co-host as of 2021.
And we can talk about Milch Kitchens.
Exactly. All right, everyone. Thanks for joining us. And we'll be back next week. The Main Course OG is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.